Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
One of the biggest fears in the marketplace today is the potential return for long-term inflation. So you have to find businesses that are capable of pricing in excess of, or at least in tandem with, the rise in prices caused by inflation without the loss of volume, because the consumer believes that your product meets their needs essentially in a superior way than others. And that's what we look for as investors.
Sempervic Partners' Tom Russo on Consuelo Mack Wealth Track.
Funding provided by Clearbridge Investments, First Eagle Investments, Royce Investment Partners, Matthews Asia, Strategus Asset Management, and Women Investing in Security and Education.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Wealth Track. I'm Consuelo Mack. A well-known Wall Street saying is that bull markets climb a wall of worry. This week's exclusive Wealth Track guest, global value investor Tom Russo, quoted that adage in a recent letter to his Sempervic Limited Partners, noting that we today live through what, to my mind, are the most unusual collection of worries that investors have had to grapple with in my 40-year-long investment journey. He went on with this perspective. Over the decades, there have been episodes when a given company or a given industry suffers extreme sell-offs, often based on issues that prove to be of a temporary nature. These episodes have been what we have been able to harness over the decades to invest when others are most fearful. Here's his kicker. Rarely have I ever seen an investment environment in which our core shareholdings across industries, geographies, and jurisdictions are uniformly weak. What's different this time, and what is Russo doing as many other investors are becoming more fearful? Tom Russo is managing member and portfolio manager at the investment advisory firm Gardner Russo & Quinn, where he oversees around $11 billion, including his Sempervic Partners funds, which he launched in 1983, heavily influenced by a talk Warren Buffett gave to his Stanford Business School class. Since converting to a limited partnership in 1990, Sempervic has generated 11% compound annual returns, outpacing the S&P and swamping its global benchmark. The global value manager focuses on owning a small group of exceptionally well-managed, globally recognized brand name firms, 17 at last count, with dominant, almost unassailable positions in their mostly consumer-oriented businesses, and then holding them pretty much forever. Of note, Berkshire Hathaway has consistently been one of his largest positions and is currently the largest by far. We started our discussion with his 40-year perspective of the unusual collection of worries investors face. What are at the top of his list?
Unexpected ones have been war in the Ukraine, has been the return of inflation, as it's now recognized, the ongoing troubles with China and their COVID exposures, and given their critical role in manufacturing and critical role in consuming globally on the playground, you know, it's a big unknown and which way China will break finally. Interest rates have gone from 0.6% for the 3-year Treasury to 3.5 or something, and mortgage rates have followed from 3% mortgage rates to 6.5%. That right. Starts to actually change the economics of buying a house, and so that's being processed. The dollar is extremely strong in the face of all of this.
Of course, that affects your companies,
yeah.
Right?
Yep, it absolutely does. And so the dollar is powering along. It's good for Americans. It isn't particularly well for international-oriented investors. So those are some of the big highlights.
When you're talking to your portfolio of companies,
yes.
I think you've got 17 yeah. now, very
yes.
concentrated, brand name, household
yeah.
names that we'd all
yeah.
know. Basically, what are they telling you about this environment?
it's hard to overcome the structural impasses that COVID delivers. You know, the scramble for raw materials, the scramble even more so for labor. You know, it's amazing to think that we have the level of structural employment that we unemployment that we have, and people cannot find work workforce.
So that's not just the case in the U.S. That's also the case
It's global. Yeah, it's really very global, and our companies are global. And what I would say is that it's remarkable. I mean, I'm just looking down the list of the the second quarter, and the kinds of gains in terms of revenue. You have Nestle's up 7%, MasterCard up 27%, Alphabet up 26%. First half revenues. So the business, the consumer is ready to go, when the economic and the political and the social outlook is right, you see enormous appetite for consumption. Having restrained them all of ourselves for the past 3 years, people are willing to really indulge, and it's happening outside of equity investments. It's happening with physical goods, secondhand Hermes purses going for thousands and thousands of dollars, and luxury watches, which Richemont traffics in, selling at three times the price from retail just across the street to a local barter guy. It's amazing. There's something strange. There's too much money around in some ways, and it's driving demand for products and services and all the rest, which probably have helped lead to inflation.
Right. So what's interesting about that, Tom, is by most accounts, we are entering into a global recession. And, you know, where we've had this incredible period of, liquidity pouring into many economies, either through central bank easing or through fiscal, tremendous stimulus through COVID. Yes. That now people are saying, that's starting to dry up, and that if you're in a global recession, demand usually basically diminishes.
Yeah.
So are you hearing any concerns about that at all from some of your core companies? And I'm thinking of like Nestle and, MasterCard, Philip Morris, Heineken, Richemont.
Certainly Richemont and Pernod Ricard. All of our luxury goods companies had a setback with one channel called global travel, because a lot of that business has been done historically by business people traveling through and stopping by and buying things en route. So that whole channel, it's 7% of their businesses, has stumbled. Up until the arrival of the Russians on Ukrainian soil, was that there was a celebration in some ways. It was the joy, the recovery from having been held at home.
Locked up.
And people were really reaching out. And so we saw that in very strong demand for spirits from Pernod Ricard and from Brown-Forman. We saw that from premium beer with Heineken and the AB InBev. And so there was a period. Now, it was hard hit by the war movement, and people are pulled back a little bit from their giddy spending. But I'd say that in general, if you look at the half-year results of the five largest holdings in Semperbic, they've been surprisingly strong in terms of the revenue growth. Nestle was modest at 7.5%, but enormous growth has they experienced during the pandemic because of investments that they had made that enabled them to participate fully through the e-commerce channel during the downturn. So their growth rate may seem a little less dramatic, but they were very broadly involved with the consumer even during the downturn because of investments that they made in e-commerce. That said, one of the shocks out of Berkshire Hathaway at the annual meeting this year has been the vigor with which they've been pursuing oil industry and energy industry investments.
Right. So Occidental Petroleum, Chevron.
To the tune of almost $60 billion.
And Berkshire, of course, is your largest holding by far. Yes. I think it's like 18% of your portfolio.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about Berkshire investing so heavily in energy, or, you know, do you second guess Warren Buffett?
No, I guess I have commitment bias. This is a concept in investing, commitment bias, so that everything I read, I have ability to somehow triangulate and make it come out favorably. But in this case, you know, it's quite possible that if you think about the world from Berkshire's perspective, they are the largest railroad company in the world, which runs on diesel. They need to fuel those extensive networks. They happen to be a large home builder. And so they are in need of the products that are being sold. So in Burlington, and then also Mid-American Energy is the largest power producer in North America, and they have to power up those plants.
Right.
Now, owning a large stake in companies that are essentially just energy plays is in a way a hedge for Berkshire's ultimate demand to keep running during times of shortages and to not be as exposed as they could be during times of rapid price increases. At the end of the day, it may simply be because they're good businesses that have generated, you know, projectable returns for a long time, and maybe that's enough.
How do you view your portfolio of companies and their ability to navigate a global recession?
Our portfolio companies, which would tend to concentrate, as you've indicated, on global consumer companies and businesses that are, provide consumers with fairly priced day in and day out products. It's not the sort of portfolio of companies that require borrowing to afford to buy. So they're everyday consumables, and so the battle there is fought on brand loyalty and on brand superiority. It's at the heart of our investment philosophy, which is that we look for businesses where the consumer doesn't believe there to be an adequate substitute. And so if they are a Hershey bar consumer and not a Cadbury bar consumer, you're going to have a very hard time peeling the money out of the hands of your Hershey to buy a Cadbury. Similarly, if it's Budweiser versus Heineken, it's going to be very difficult to pry.
Right.
That gives manufacturers an enormous benefit because it allows them to have pricing power because of the price inelastic demand or something that you can't do without. And so we look for, in every investment, whether the business offers a service or a product or that the user or consumer doesn't think there's an adequate substitute. It shows up in brands. It can also show up in something as unusual as a company called Martin Marietta Materials, which is a crushed stone quarry company that serves the need of construction and road building, tunnel building, and all of the rest. But you can't ship it more than 20 miles. So if you have a network of depots and warehouses and quarries, your consumers in the immediate 25-mile radius really have to come to you. And so you have to be responsible in terms of the pricing. But you can raise prices. And I think one of the biggest fears in the marketplace today is the return of the potential return for long-term inflation. And so you have to find businesses that are capable of pricing in excess of, or at least in tandem with, the rise in prices caused by inflation without the loss of volume, because the consumer believes that your product meets their needs essentially in a superior way than others. And that's what we look for as investors. And so we look forward to a world, first of all, where we were able to cover the increase in interest rates. So, for example, Nestle, I think their shares are up 7.5% revenue the first half of the year. 5 percentage points of that was pricing, and 2% of it plus was volume, which shows that they can raise price and not lose volume. That comes from loyalty at the start, but then it comes from innovation. And that's where the world suddenly becomes extraordinarily exciting. Because that know your consumer is all about the tools that our portfolio companies now enjoy from Google, Facebook. They offer Heineken and Nestle such transformative benefits by allowing them to know what the elasticities are on the run, what product to sell, what packaging, what promotion, what venue, what day. And when you line all of those up, It cuts through the fog that always accompanied advertising, as expressed by David Ogilvy, which is that 50% of your spending on advertising is a waste. But the problem is ex ante, you don't know which 50% it is. that you're spending, so you have to spend the 100.
Right.
It's no longer the way, I'd say, of the top 10 companies that we invest with. Almost all of them have at least $1 billion in savings underway, under programs that take advantage of knowing better what their consumer is prepared to pay for what.
You own Alphabet, the parent company of Google.
Yes. Yeah.
And one of the things that you've written about to, again, limited partners, is the fact that you didn't really fully participate in the FANGs. Are there entry points now that you would consider, given what's happened to the FANG stocks? I mean, are you, as a value investor, and the fact that some of their products really do have tremendous value, again, aside from Alphabet, which you do own?
Well, we're absolutely looking, researching, networking in areas that we hadn't been directly before, but we've been pretty attuned to the advertising component, even without being an investor. That's a harder, higher stake game to play in some ways. We're looking for businesses, and we're extremely pleased across the board year to date that have the capacity to reinvest. That's the number one variable, and so much of Wall Street today is built around companies that promise to send back money. And our goal is to find businesses that, because of new geographies or adjacent products or demand growth in even mature markets, have a huge pipeline of spending programs. And you can think of few as strong an example of that as Heineken, which we've owned since 1986, but which today, over the past year, has amped up its investment in South Africa. It has investments underway in Nigeria. They're the largest brewer in parts of Vietnam, and that business has spun off $500 million of profit for them sometimes. Large presence in Mexico. These are all places that Heineken, the parent company, can take funds from their mature markets and deploy them to capture new geographies, new consumers, new products, and new flavors. The innovation pipeline is deep, so they're spending heavily on that. They launched a product called 0.0, which is zero alcohol, and that actually tastes well and packaged with an appeal. They've recently, as a result of the COVID downturn in the pandemic, they were able to increase their stake in India, where they today own over 60% of the largest brewer in India called Kingfisher. Now, the Indian population drink 1.5 liters of beer per year. In China, it's close to 40. In the U.S., it's close to 60. In the Czech Republic, it's over 100. But 1.5 is extraordinarily modest, and it's because of the lack of investment, lack of branding, lack of distribution. Heineken has all of those skills, and we now have the ability to invest behind a market of $1.3 billion in population, which had not been available under Western terms before now. And we're extremely excited about the table that's been set for the next decade that Heineken now enjoys.
That is another quality, as you said, that you look for in your portfolio companies, is that ability to expand their markets, the know-how to do it, and their willingness to do it in markets that are growing rapidly.
So
emerging markets is a good example of that.
Yeah.
And there's also a psychological and a willingness by management too, because there is so much pressure on companies to give back now
in the forms of
a dividend or share buybacks. And you're saying that your portfolio companies would forego that immediate gratification for shareholders in order to reinvest for longer term results. Is that what you're saying?
It's exactly correct. But think about the businesses that we own. 50% of them are still controlled by founding families. And so think how you'd manage a business if you were a founding family. You would not try to maximize reported income on a quarterly basis. You would actually never really want to maximize reported income, because it tells somebody that they should come by and take a look if there might be some taxes owed. You want to build wealth. And so long as you have an engine that's generating the funds, And then you can deploy it in a way that actually generates reported losses because of the clumsiness of starting up big spending programs. You really have a deferred gain from not having to pay tax on as much because you have the offset of the startup businesses weighing against reported profits. Now, Wall Street doesn't like that a bit. They want to calibrate the quarterly distributions to the penny, and they want that money to go out quickly, and it serves as a restraint against profitable investment.
One of the other strategies that you mentioned uses the word strategy called, you know, strategic focus. And
yes.
Again, in getting through the kind of environment, challenging environment we're in. So the best at what a company does is to focus. You're looking for companies that focus on that. Is that something
yes.
you got from Warren Buffett as well, that idea? Or,
well, you know, I've obviously had the great fortune, as we all have, of learning from Warren and Charlie through their
right.
public works, public statements, and their principles and their actions. So it's just, they lay it out. It's just awfully hard to discipline and follow. And it's also hard to then reinvent themselves as they've done so fully over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I think Berkshire epitomizes what we look for, which is they have strategic advantages in many of their lines of business. That means that if somebody has an insurance company for sale, as Allegheny Corp recently did, they're likely to go talk to Warren because they have a business that has so much capital that they can take on risks that others can't. Because, you know, if you're looking to place a $5 billion premium to protect against market declines on a basket of equity markets worldwide, which represent $30 billion, it's rare to get $5 billion to warranty that 32 won't go down. But this actually happened. Berkshire was awarded the $5 billion, and you know they invested it over the 15 years of existence, and the insured was perfectly sleep well at night because they knew Warren had $100 billion of claims paying capacity, and anyone else who pitched that deal probably would have left themselves slight on the capacity to pay, and so Berkshire was the logical and in some ways only option there. And it comes back in again and again and again in returns. They get to buy things that others don't. And then within the network of Berkshire, you have a host of businesses that they celebrate. One of them is See's Chocolate, which they described how since they bought the business in the early 1970s, it has returned to the parent company, sent back to Omaha, $2 billion on a $30 million investment.
Wow.
And today the business is still probably worth well over $1 billion. But the
yep.
most interesting thing is we want businesses that can reinvest in their own business to grow. But within Berkshire, the extraordinary gift is that the founder of See's, who sold the business to Warren, still ran it, doesn't have to deploy the capital. If he doesn't have compelling use, it just goes back to Berkshire, Omaha. And he can focus running preeminent chocolate business, and Warren can deploy capital. And that model, I think, will remain active at Berkshire going forward, and I hope indefinitely, because it really separates the distinction between businesses that have to grow and businesses that spin off cash and aren't required to grow. They're not penalized for not coming up with, you know, a host of other things, as those businesses are. Often, if they're public companies, they stumble to try to deploy capital back. And it's an important time when Berkshire's found many good businesses to buy when family-controlled businesses try to extend into other areas and they find it more difficult than just maintaining their core business and sending capital back to Berkshire, who deploys it globally.
Right. Tom, one investment for a long-term diversified portfolio, what would you have all of us own some of in a diversified portfolio?
I've just given you a summary of the one that it would be top on line. They have this, it'd be Berkshire Hathaway, and it'd be based on the strength of their existing franchises, on the premium position they command in making new acquisitions and funding new investments, and just the lack of agency costs. There is no other business in the world that offers investors the same fair deal as Berkshire does, with all of their interests being denominated in the same shares that we own. There's a massive alignment of interest that we find to be quite rewarding.
Tom, thank you very much for joining us on Wealth Track.
Thank you very much for having me. Enjoyed it immensely.
At the close of every Wealth Track, we try to give you one suggestion to help you build and protect your wealth over the long term. This week's action point is an exercise that award-winning financial advisor Mark Cortazzo is doing with his new clients in this changed investment era of higher interest rates and inflation. It is do an objective review of your portfolio. Cortazzo asks, if you were starting with a clean slate, is it the portfolio you would build today? As he said, if the answer is yes, great. If not, make some changes that reflect the new realities, not the old ones. As John Maynard Keynes replied when criticized for changing his views, when the facts change, I change my mind. What do you do, sir? The financial facts have certainly changed. Your portfolio should reflect it. Next week, influential and always thought-provoking economist Dave Rosenberg joins us. I can't wait to hear his take on the economy and markets. In this week's extra feature, how does Tom Russo maintain his optimism and calm in the face of so much uncertainty? We'll find out. If you are so inclined, please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and our YouTube channel. Thanks for spending time with us. Have a relaxing weekend and make the week ahead a healthy, profitable, and productive one.